I mean, there was a really great 1500 meter race last night that was incredible. But I don't know. That's a good intro for the podcast. It was incredible, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the 1500 meter.
Because it's running at
it's
all?
It's freaking long. it's a long time to run.
As opposed to the 100 meter. It's a, if you run it fast, it's not that long. They did it in less than 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
That's pretty long.
Well, yeah. So last night, it was just incredible. There were two Americans who finished in the on the podium for the first time in over 100 years.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Good for us.
Yeah. USA. USA.
I'll take the win on behalf of our countrymen.
That's right. That's right.
From people we've never met, never will met.
That's right.
Congratulations. And we own part of that gold medal now.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring our take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me as always, Pastor Drew Belzer.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Noah Lisa McCarter.
Yeah, still off gallivanting around.
I think she's in Disney.
Oh.
At the time of recording, maybe not time of release.
It's real wet there.
Is it?
They're having a big tropical storm move through, like lots of flooding in the whole southeast region.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how high of ground Disney sits on, but like all of Florida is basically below sea level, right? So that's... it's concerning.
Maybe the top of, you know, some rides.
That's right. gotta get up into that. What's the Haunted Mansion? It's not Haunted Mansion. It's Guardians of the Galaxy or something now. Isn't it? That like does the drop.
No, that one is still the, it's not Haunted Mansion. It is the Tower of Terror.
Tower of Terror. That's it. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah.
For a moment up above sea level. And it just comes right back down.
It's now a water ride.
Yeah. And yeah, we've been, I guess at time of release, Olympics is over.
Yeah, they will have ended yesterday. I believe closing ceremonies are on Sunday. So we'll see. At time of release, who knows what people are going to be offended by.
Sure.
A whole new opportunity.
Could have even more
offended
people about the Olympics.
Yeah.
Oh, man, come on, people. Like, the Olympics is the one thing like we have all together, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, we don't have a lot of things that we have all together as a nation. This should be. This is the one thing we got.
Well, I think that's part of what people are upset about is like they ruined the one thing that we had together.
But like they didn't.
I hear you. I'm just
a thing that was like 30 seconds long. There's a dude Alden Glue. Like it didn't ruin it. Like even if you don't like it, like just move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean like. Yeah.
Speaking of, sorry, we mentioned the Arrested Development scene with the tableaus last week.
Yeah.
I've also seen things with the guy in blue where it's the one
it's
character.
Tobias.
Yeah, Tobias painted up in blue. Just also That's, really great. Yeah.
Arrested Development is a very, very good show.
The original three.
The original three seasons.
Yeah.
Its
reboot was
pound for pound. Like, it's only three seasons long. It's just as funny as anything else.
It is really solid.
It's really great.
Comes out swinging and hits.
So there you go for a 20-year-old TV show.
But it hits. Anyway.
All right. So we're going to... I got to pull up our news story.
Yeah.
All right. We got some news.
Let's put off the real topic for as long as possible.
You know, I like Han Solo. You like Han Solo. Everybody likes Han Solo.
Who doesn't? Did Han shoot first? Is that the question?
No. He definitely did.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about a smuggler.
Oh, okay. Han Solo was a smuggler, for those of you following along at home who did not get that connection there.
Yes, Han Solo is a smuggler. There we go. All right, so we got a story about a smuggler.
Okay.
Have you ever, you know, smuggled anything you want to confess to?
Not knowingly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I've been in maybe I've been a patsy in somebody's scheme, but I've never.
I think once I flew, and then afterwards I found like scissors in my like toiletry bag that was in my carry-on. I'm like, oh, look at that.
I don't think that's the same as smuggling. I think that's,
you know.
It is contraband. You should not have had
that's
them.
True. Yeah. That's
but
true.
They also should have confiscated them. So.
They should have. Yeah. It's also like, they missed it.
Yeah.
They seem to find the bug spray in every one of our kids' bags every time we fly with the youth group. That's always found.
Yeah. But not this machete that I happened to accidentally have in
it
my
was
bag.
Plain scissors. Okay.
Were they safety scissors? Maybe that's why they weren't concerned with them.
They were just normal scissors.
Okay. Why did you have regular
scissors? I don't know. You know, who knows? Like, it's one of those things, like, I was going somewhere and I threw them in my toiletry bag and then they just stayed in there for, you know, a year until I flew. And so,
I'm wondering under what circumstances you threw scissors into your toiletry bag at all. Like,
I don't know. Okay. If I knew, they wouldn't have been in there. Sometimes things get missed, okay?
All right. Well, neither of us have actually smuggled something. What did this person smuggle or try to smuggle? Or how did they injure themselves attempting to smuggle?
Smuggling into Hong Kong, which is, if I'm going to smuggle anywhere, that's the last place.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah.
100 live snakes.
Ooh, into Hong Kong. Okay.
Into Hong Kong.
That's a choice.
In his pants.
Yikes. Ooh. this is snakes on a plane is coming real here. I don't like this at all.
Yeah. So
was he on a plane into Hong Kong with these snakes in his pants?
Through a port. So
could be a ship.
Snakes on a ship. Mildly better than snakes on a plane, I suppose.
I could at least jump in the water if I have to.
Or throw the snakes in the water.
Yeah, there's an option. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they found 6 canvas drawstring bags sealed with tape in the pockets of his pants. And when the officers opened the bags, they found a number of live snakes in various shapes and colors. And after counting, a total of 104 snakes were found.
Mm-mm.
I know. If I'm smuggling snakes like in my pants,
nope.
It's not
where they're going.
There's few places that you'd be like, I want them less. Right?
I mean, at least they were in a bag. So that does help.
Okay. So none of them are venomous.
Allegedly.
Oh, and milk snake.
Oh, yeah.
Hognose snake.
Okay.
Corn snake.
Yeah.
Texas rat snake. Well, why you got to bring us into this?
Leave us out of it.
And bull snake.
Well, Texas rat snake is an exotic pet in Hong Kong. So that's probably.
Yeah. 4 of these snakes are non-native to China. I don't know which 4.
I assume Texas.
Texas rat snake seems like one of them. Yeah. Maybe.
Corn snake,
Western
not.
Hognose snake also seems not in an eastern nation of China would not be there. So a bull snake or milk snake? I don't know. Which one seems more...
I think I've heard of bull snakes in the U.S. So I think maybe that's more to our area.
Okay. So the milk snake, interesting.
I could be wrong, but that's... Right. Yeah. Watch, it's going to be Texas is the one that's native to China. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think, you know?
So. I'm not going to be attempting this anytime soon. I'm glad somebody caught him, because moving snakes from one place to another, man, it's not a good thing, regardless of whether they're in your pants or not. This is can be bad for the whole ecology of things. Like,
I think we've covered, like, in the past, like, people go out, have, you know, tournaments in the Florida Everglades to go out and catch non-native snakes.
Yeah.
When I was in high school... Our college, I had a botany class, and we went to a park, and our botany teacher would, like, rip down plants in this park that were non-native. Like, he was very anti-native.
We got to do that in Chicago. With our mission trip, we went to Chicago, and we cut down non-native plants and got to burn them for some reason that we're still not sure if we were supposed to do that, but that's what they told us to do.
some dude said to do it.
We work for you today. Okay. Yeah. You've got a hat on, so I guess... Yes, that's good enough.
He was not affiliated with the park. He was affiliated with another organization.
With the organization we were there with, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were there to help him.
Yeah, it wasn't just
they had a website.
It wasn't just a stranger in the park was like, hey, let's set that stuff on fire.
And yeah, when they're like, let's set this thing on fire in the middle of this forest area, he had a shovel. So, yeah. I mean, like, if anything goes wrong, he got that shovel.
I will say, burning something in Chicago... surrounded by lush green stuff, very different from burning something in Texas surrounded by dry flammable stuff.
That is true.
So there's that for a lot of our Texas listeners who are like, well, how did the whole city not burn down? It happened
before.
It was a controlled burn. There was no cow kicking over any lanterns in this particular
now in fairness to the other side, when we were firing, some smoke was coming out in different places going through the root system.
That is true. We did suddenly find something that should not have been on fire underground.
And then we left. But I didn't hear about it, you know.
The city didn't burn down. We were there for several more days. The city was still fine.
Yeah. I mean, we had to drive an hour to get to this place, but, you know, still, whatever.
It's fine.
All right, there you go. Do you want to...
No smuggling.
No smuggling. 100. We did not... although our youth were busted for having... bug spray and filled water bottles in their backpacks flying.
Like the
they do not have any snakes.
Like the brilliant 80-plus students that they are.
One of our kids were busted twice on 2 separate trips for bug spray in his backpack. Yeah.
After every time being told, take everything out of your backpack. Yeah.
You know, I've been told experience is the best teacher, but maybe for some kids.
they
got to repeat that class.
If you were going to smuggle something, what would you smuggle it? And where would you keep it on your person? Let's say you can't put it in a bag. It has to be on your person.
Yeah.
What would you smuggle and where would you put it?
I mean, the classic smuggling tales
sure.
are in places I do not want to put anything.
Agreed. Yeah. So. I think that's why neither of us have a career as a smuggler in our future.
Nothing internally. Let's just say that.
I could see cutting out like something in the bottom of my shoe okay. and like having like a false bottom to my shoe.
Yeah, but
and...
then you got to put your shoe through the thing now.
Mm, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know how, you know.
Well, I got to get TSA pre-check first. Then that's I can true. Put my shoe on.
That's true. You got to get that pre-check.
And then I'm just like, I'm smuggling like diamonds or something like that.
I mean, I did wear a walrus costume through TSA.
That's true.
They were totally on board. So.
They were game for that. But I did have to take my shoes off.
Yeah.
Shoes off, wolf on, and yes. ready to go.
I even have the head up.
Yeah. I was required to put the head up. I walked through with it off, and they're like, no, you got to put it up. And I was like, what? She's like, we got to see the full effect. I was like, okay.
She was amused. Yeah.
She was very fun.
All right. Let's jump into our main topics.
All right. Let's do it.
So first, we have a ELCA Lutheran.
Yeah. In the news.
On the ballot.
Look at this.
For vice president.
Yeah. This is a fun fact of the podcast, probably.
Yes. Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, has been selected to be Kamala Harris's running mate.
Yep.
And
this is not news by the time this comes out. It's almost a week old.
It's not even news now. Yeah.
I mean, it's still newish.
Newish. Yeah. And he is an ELCA Lutheran.
He is. So. Member of Pilgrim Lutheran Church up there in Minnesota, eh?
Yeah.
That was more Canada. Sorry. Went too far north. Overshot my accent.
There are a lot of ELCA Lutherans in Minnesota.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like in the world. I was like, yeah, there's like three million of us. Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean, that's a lot. Yeah. You know, but compared to the world, not that much.
Sure. Yeah. Small percentage.
But far more ELCA Lutherans up there than we have down here.
Far more.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about having an ELCA Lutheran potentially in the White House?
Yeah, I think it's kind of exciting.
Does the vice president stay in the White House?
They work in the White House.
They only got like a wing? And, you know,
they stay at a, like their residence is at a naval base not far from the White House.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I believe that is the case. That is the vice president's residence, but they work in the White House.
Okay. I didn't know like if they get like, you know, their own room.
Like, I think they get an office. Or maybe they're in,
sleepovers.
They might be in the building. There's a old executive office building, OEOB or something like that.
Interesting.
They might be in that, which is like next door to the White House.
Okay.
I don't know all the vice presidential details.
You know this from watching West Wing?
I do absolutely know this from watching West Wing.
There you go. I've seen Veep.
That's right.
I did not go into this.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. She had an office. Yeah. At any rate, what was the question? I got distracted by vice presidential trivia.
How you feel about having ELCA Lutheran?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a fun little thing for ELCA Lutherans, often whom are not in positions of like big
national
political
renown.
Things. Yeah, national renown, right? And so I think that's kind of a fun little nod to us. I don't know that we should be swayed particularly one way or another to vote for someone based on the fact that they're a member of the same denomination that we're a member of. Seems like he's a good guy. Seems like he's got very interesting takes on policies, and it'll be an interesting race. But I'm not going to say, oh, well, he's an ELCA Lutheran. You got to vote for him now. That's not how we roll. You can still make up your own mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think more progressive than some of the other potential candidates out there.
Yep.
To your liking, maybe or maybe not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
But also, I think seems... like a pretty decent guy.
Yeah.
Seems fun.
He seems like that classic Midwestern kind of, you know, personality. In fact, I've seen lots of memes of like Tim Walz as the like perfect Midwestern dad, where it's like, you know, Tim Walz wants to put a $20 in your back pocket because he doesn't think you have enough gas money, or Tim Walz wants you to call when you get there just to make sure you're safe. Or,
those are fun little memes. Yeah. And I can pick up that energy from him.
Absolutely.
I did watch a fun little video of him and his daughter at this state fair there.
Classic.
And it's really cute.
Minnesota has allegedly one of the best state fairs in the country.
Yeah, it seems really sweet. Was a teacher, was a coach, was a National Guard member.
Oh, I did not know the National Guard piece.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota. So
I think I actually grew up in Nebraska.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it's close enough.
Yeah.
It's all the same to me. I'm in Texas. I don't care about these places.
Attaboy. All right. Well, yeah. Good luck to all the candidates this fall.
Yeah. And truly...
except
whomever,
for the one crazy guy. No good luck to him.
I mean, you have to be more specific.
That's fair.
Are you talking about Bear Cub?
Yeah, that's who I was talking about.
What a wild story. If you're unfamiliar, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
For some reason decided to say, hey, by the way, uh-huh. I was driving drunk and I killed a bear cub yeah. in New York somehow. Yeah. And I drove it to Central Park and I just abandoned it in the woods.
Yep.
For like one, I don't understand the story at all.
Yeah.
But also, like, why are you telling us this?
All of these are good questions.
Like, these are like, what do you hope to gain from this?
Yeah.
Like,
so he would be the one candidate to whom I do not wish good luck at this one.
The one?
The one.
Yeah. Whomever is elected president in a few short months here in the United States, you know, truly,
let's not kid ourselves. It's going to be a few long months.
But I truly am praying for both of them, both the vice presidents and their families, because I know it'll be a grueling process.
It will be.
And we are in a contentious time. And
yep.
Hopefully, whomever is elected can.
Yeah.
Good things happen.
Absolutely. And
even if the person I vote for does not win.
Yeah. We have a friend of the podcast who's on the rotating detail for the, what's his name? J.D. Vance.
Oh, do we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Ex-member?
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, we're now like 2 degrees of separation from a vice presidential candidate.
There you go.
So that's something. So we've got that.
I mean, you
Beyonce.
You probably have met people who have met Tim Walz, though, in the LCA world.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've met people from Minnesota, so
yeah.
Done.
Me too.
I basically know the potential next vice president. That's yeah. Great.
All right. So we skipped last week. It was the first Monday of the month.
That was.
And so we usually do a What's a Bible-based episode.
Yes. But it turns out that tableaus and questionable Olympic choices are not in the Bible. Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah, so we decided to go with more of a timely one, and now we're going to be back in the Bible.
All right,
so
let's
what
do it.
Does the Bible? Or even continuing, what does the Bible say about blank?
Yeah,
and you know we're going to hit with the death penalty.
Okay. What does the Bible say about the death penalty?
So here in Texas, we are one of the states that does practice the death penalty.
Yeah.
So
more readily than some others.
Yes. Yeah. More readily. Yes. And so we might at the end kind of get into kind of more of our personal political views on the death penalty in America today.
Sure,
but
sure.
But we would want to start with, what does the Bible say about the death penalty?
Because that's what we're here for. I'm with you.
And and I think that's important.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got a couple of verses here.
Okay.
And we're going to start pulling these things.
Pull them out.
All right, so first.
These are verses from the Bible?
These are verses from the Bible.
Okay.
Not.
You're not dropping rhymes.
I did not write a rap about the death penalty. Just yo, electric chair.
Yikes. Nope. Absolutely not.
It's not fair.
Good God, this is getting so much worse.
Robert Kennedy hit a bear. All right. You're welcome for that. That's free.
Yeah.
If you're listening, if you want to use that, I love it.
Yeah.
You don't need any penny royalties.
Okay.
Just want a cred.
That's very kind of you.
Just a cred. All right. Genesis 9:6.
Okay.
All right. Whoever sheds the blood of a human, by a human shall that person's blood be shed. For in his own image, God made humankind. This is a poem. It's not very good, but you know, like.
It's about as good as your rap.
Well, God wrote this poem, so, you know, I take that as a compliment. yeah, so this is pretty early on in Genesis, you know.
Yeah.
This is post-flood mm-hmm. Genesis. So
pre-Abraham.
Pre-Abraham, so rebuilding of kind of like civilization and kind of that narrative. And we're kind of establishing laws.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beginning of that establishment of laws. All right, whoever sheds the blood of human, by a human shall that person's blood be shed, for in his own image God made humankind.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So. All of our laws should be written in verse like this.
I love it. That'd be fun. If, you know, if the presidential debate had a rap battle portion, I'm watching it.
Would you?
I'm watching a YouTube clip the next day.
That's fair. Yeah, okay. I would do that. Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Obviously, I don't think we're going to have any problems with the second half of this, that in his own image, God made humankind.
God made it humankind in God's image. Yep. We're good with that.
Right away, we have, you know, the basis of Old Testament law is going to be found kind of tangentially in this, right? This Jesus will flip it to the golden rule.
Yep.
But basically,
we're not there yet.
But whatever happens to you, you get to do to somebody else.
Yes.
That's really like eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
Yep.
Life for life. you know, this yep. is kind of found in this right here.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think so far?
I mean, I don't love it, but I also can't say like, oh, we're just going to ignore that part, right? Like, I mean, yeah. it's an important part of scripture, but I also don't think it's the final word, right? And so agreed. We read it within the context of the entire scripture. We don't just pull that verse out and say, see, there you go. God wants us to.
Well, some people do.
I understand that some people do. I'm saying that as a faithful reader of scripture, that's not what we should do.
Agreed. All right. What's also here, and I think that is fair, is it is supposed to be a level of proportional justice.
Yes.
Like, even in this kind of more primitive version of justice, the desire is for proportionality.
Yeah.
Like, eye for an eye is not two eyes for one eye, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like you hurt me, so I get to kill you based yeah. on my pain. It's supposed yeah. to be a proportional level of justice. Yeah. So that is a level of fairness attached mm-hmm. to it, whether we, you know, like that fairness or not. But in a unjust ancient world, sure. it was designed to have a level of justice attached.
Yeah.
All right. So
particularly in a world where laws were not carried out equally across the spectrum, right? So
agreed. Yeah.
So as God's giving this rule, it's not like, oh, kings, you get to operate this way and regular people, you operate this way. God's sure. law is the same for everybody. And that is groundbreaking in a yeah. lot of ways for the Old Testament at the time.
So then the biblical authors will mm-hmm. have, like, you know, soon afterwards, relatively, will have kind of an entire book based on, like, let's expand on this out, right? Like,
yeah.
the book of Leviticus, let's really nail this out, let's pull this out. And they're going to have some other reasons why a person's blood should be shed. And
okay.
it's not always, like, whoever sheds the blood of human. And I didn't list these out, but we've got a couple other,
okay.
based on sexual sin, mm-hmm. religious sin, mm-hmm. Societal sin. You know, those okay. three things, like, based on the level, you could die for them.
Okay.
You could receive the death penalty.
Okay.
And then as the ancient Israelites are traveling from Egypt to the Promised Land and mm-hmm. this forming of kind of this new group of people,
yeah.
they're going to have their own nation mm-hmm. and their own nation's laws, they are going to start expanding upon this, right? They got to figure out, how does this actually work?
Sure.
How does it look? And so I do have these.
Because it's one thing to write a law. It's another thing to actually practice a law
yeah.
and carry it out and enforce it. Yeah.
So even though, you know, right away we have kind of like a verse that's like, hey, if you kill somebody, you should be killed. We've got some amendments to the law.
Okay.
We got some balance
it.
There.
Love right, amendments.
So this is from Numbers 35. But if somebody pushes somebody without enmity or hurls any object without lying in wait or while handling any stone that could cause death, unintentionally drops it on another and death ensues, though they were not enemies and no harm was intended. Then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the avenger of blood in accordance with these ordinances. And the congregation shall rescue the slayer from the avenger of blood. And the congregation shall send the slayer back to the original city of refuge, and the slayer shall live in it until death of the high priest who is anointed with the holy oil. All right, so we've got,
yeah.
if you're liking, that's a little sounds weird.
Yes.
This is a manslaughter charge.
It is,
here.
But also very specific. If you have a stone that could kill someone but wasn't meant to kill someone,
yeah,
and
yeah.
if you're not hiding behind it, and
if you're throwing something but you're not hiding behind a tree waiting to throw this
right,
at a person.
Right, totally fine.
Yeah, if you just throw it and it hits somebody, like it happens.
Yeah, yeah, but if you're hiding, that's,
yeah.
that's
but, no but there also is a punishment here.
Yes,
so they have
is.
To go live in the city of refuge. So why don't you tell us what a city of refuge is?
Yeah, so yeah. Cities of refuge were actually also kind of groundbreaking at the time. They were set up when the people came into the Promised Land. So here in the book of Numbers, we don't have cities of refuge yet because they don't get set up yeah. formally until they're actually in.
So they're like this theoretically at this point. Like
it's
one day we will
right.
have
we
a city.
We will have this. Yes. And they do practice this. This is something that actually happens for the ancient Israelites. And so these cities were designated around the area. And so if you and I are out in the field and I'm, you know, swinging my axe and my axe flies back behind me and hits you in the head and kills you, mm-hmm. I can run to the city of refuge or just go to the city of refuge before
you better be running.
Before your brother yeah. or your family comes to try to kill me.
Yeah.
And I can go to the city of refuge and say, this is what happened. This was an accident. And the city of refuge's responsibility is to protect me from you and your wrath, basically.
Yeah.
And so they're going to say, this was an accident. You're not allowed to kill him. And they're going to protect me and keep you from being able to, or your family from being able to exact unjust revenge on me
yeah.
for an accidental death.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, a provision for an accidental death right here.
Yes.
So, and you got to, and then you have to live in that city of refuge. One, the judge has to say, this seems like an accident.
Yeah. That's legit. Yeah.
And two, then you live there until the death of the high priest.
Yeah.
So which, you don't get to go home. You got to stay
yeah,
there.
Yeah. You got to stay
know.
There.
Which, so, you know, again, we're trying out some provisions around what happens when a member kills another member of the community.
And realistically, the staying there is probably as much to protect me as it is to punish me, right? It's to give me a space where I'm not going to be avenged by your family, who are probably still angry about the fact that you died in the field.
Yeah. All right, and then we have another provision, also in Numbers 35. It says, if anyone kills another, the murderer shall be put to death on the evidence of witnesses.
Ooh.
But no one shall be put to death on the testimony of a single witness.
Okay, so you got to have more than one.
More than one witness. Mm-hmm. Have to have witnesses, and you got to have more than one witness.
Yeah.
So, and this doesn't mean somebody could be punished on the word of one witness, but only put to death, right?
Right, like, sure.
So we're putting some barriers around this idea of the death penalty.
Do you have any idea, and I don't have this knowledge in my head, but do you have any idea if we have any sort of laws around the number of witnesses for a death penalty case to be carried out?
I have no idea.
Here or anywhere else in the United States?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Okay. Listeners, somebody out there might be a lawyer. Let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we got a couple asterisks to the the law here.
Yeah. So someone should be put to death if they kill someone, but only if there's witnesses and only if it was intentional.
Yes. Yeah. And so there are definitely times in the Old Testament where we see God act out this death penalty, right?
Yes. Like,
that something happens and God, as ultimate arbiter and ultimate judge, gets to say, they have violated the commandments of God. They have violated these things and they need to be put to death.
Yes.
I'm thinking, for me, most classically, there's a story where one guy in the Old Testament kind of commits a crime, shows up in the gathering of everybody, and the ground opens up and swallows him.
Classic.
And his whole family.
Love it.
Love it is, you know, an interesting choice of words. You know, like, so there you go. And but that's by God, right?
Yeah.
Like God is doing that judgment.
Sure. When Moses comes down and the people are worshiping the golden calf,
sure.
Ground opens up and swallows a bunch of people.
I think, there's some... Even like the Levites, like take up swords and like kill some people.
There's also some of that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the death penalty.
Because
that's not from a judge or not a, you know,
right.
a courtroom scene kind of a thing. I mean, obviously it looked a lot different back then, but you know.
Yeah.
They don't have that. And so when we were talking about this, we did say like, I could not remember one time where the community of Israel actually does the death penalty.
Yeah. And you and I were in agreement. We could not remember it.
Yes. But I found one.
Yeah. And upon reading it further, I understand why we didn't remember it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much of a story.
It's like it's in the midst of la, 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 this little three verse story that we're going to read here. And then la, 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 like it's not part of a larger narrative. So we'll pick it up and we'll go from there. Yeah.
Yeah. But we do have one. And so I wanted to read it, you know, to say, to acknowledge like, hey, this happens.
Sure.
Yeah.
You want me to read this one since you read the last
go ahead.
One?
Yeah.
All right, so this is from Numbers 15. So this is before we've got all the rules about manslaughter.
Yeah.
Just for your chronology here. Numbers 15. While the Israelites were in the wilderness, a man was found gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and the whole assembly, and they kept him in custody because it was not clear what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man must die. The whole assembly must stone him outside the camp." So the assembly took him outside the camp and stoned him to death as the Lord commanded Moses.
That's rough.
That is.
That's a rough story.
It is. Well, I think is worthy of note, right? They kept him in custody because they didn't know what to do, and they waited for instruction from the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't really know what to do with the part where the Lord says he has to die because he was picking up wood on the Sabbath. That part we got to wrestle with some more. But I do think, hey, before we took action, we were very genuinely discerning what is God's intention for this space.
Correct. So at this point in... Leviticus, there are death penalty against like breaking the Sabbath. Like that's part of the laws there. So, this is, but they're still like, do we do this?
Are we sure?
We got some witnesses. Mm-hmm. So we got those who found him. So we got more than one person is at least, you know, proclaiming this. It seems harsh.
It does. It absolutely seems harsh.
Yeah. This is a tough one.
Yeah.
Admittedly, this one is a tough pill to swallow. Like, you know, like even in an ancient unjust world, you know, if the story is like they stumbled upon a guy who was beating a man to death and they decided to kill him, you'd be like, well, you know what? I kind of get it. Like, you know, like I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Like, but I get it.
Yeah.
You know, like this one is though, like it's gathering some wood. Like,
yeah.
So it's much harder to get you know, from a reader and much more complicated to kind of understand, probably, you know, for even an experienced Bible reader. This is a tough story to kind of navigate through.
Yeah. If I were trying to justify the story or even just kind of try to comprehend the story, I think one thing that's helpful to remember is that God is trying to set up a nation in Israel that is meant to be a light to everybody else.
Yeah.
And in order to be that light, as we kind of understand, they had to be different and they had to be clear. Like, this is how the kingdom of God is meant to operate in this world. And so anything outside of that has to go, right?
Yeah.
What's helpful for me to remember is that the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ works backward and forward, right? So, like, this person, while we look at this and say, what on earth was going on and why would he have to die for this, still, I still believe, is saved within the understanding of our function of how Jesus Christ works, right? And so it is not put to death and eternal punishment, right?
Yeah.
But there's an element in which, okay, this person is still ultimately saved, but what I still don't understand is why did this have to be the way in order to bring the kingdom of God to earth, right? That's the part I don't get, but that's the kind of larger framework that's trying to happen.
100%. I'm with you. All right. That's all the verses that I kind of pulled from the Old Testament. There's a few others that we could do.
Sure.
I think, okay, I'm going to spoil kind of the ending here.
Oh.
Old Testament Israel, do they believe and support the death penalty? Yes.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they killed a guy.
Yep.
They have laws about the death penalty.
Yep.
They have provisions about the death penalty. They even have, as they're thinking this through, they have like asterisks around what would lead to us executing somebody.
Yes.
You know, they are thinking about the death penalty
yes.
as a nation.
Yes.
So does the Bible as written for the ancient Israelites support the death penalty? I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
Now, we'll get to kind of what it meant for us now. But in that time, in their culture, in that context, I think yes.
Yeah. In practice, there are a lot of writings of other ancient rabbis writing in what we would call, and the word just went out of my head. Anyway, rabbis would like write notes in the margins of texts and stuff like that. And those writings have been collected over a period of time. And in those writings, it was clear that rabbis wanted to make it as hard as possible to do this, right?
Yeah.
And so it was a part of the culture. We put every obstacle in place to try to make it really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so it was not something that was carried out willy-nilly. It was not something that was just done all the time, like it would have been in a lot of other cultures, right?
Sure.
You know, a lot of other cultures at the time had no problem with the death penalty and carrying it out brutally and viciously and all the time, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it didn't happen or that they didn't have textual evidence to support it. I'm just saying they put in things in place to try to minimize it.
Yeah. And so also, I mean, like at this time, they're a wandering nation. They have no homes. They have no cities of refuge.
Mm-hmm.
So even as they're thinking about these cities of refuge, they don't have any.
Yeah.
And so the idea of like, we captured somebody and we need to put them in jail. They don't have a jail.
Yeah.
And what does a jail look like to a wandering tribe?
Sure.
Right? Like, do they tie him to a wagon and he just walks behind the wagon and like, that's jail? So in some ways, like you're kind of forced into like a little bit of like, what does this look like?
Yeah.
Either, you know, punishment either looks like social punishment, right? Of like either shame or being ostracized by the community, or capital punishment. Like usually that's probably being beaten or death. You know, like those are really, but in prison is not really an option for them.
Agreed.
So it is an option for the vast majority of nations in this world. Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, that's...
We'll get there.
That's what we got to work
on. Yeah, we're not all there right. yet.
So I got two verses that I pulled here from the Old Testament, the New Testament.
Okay.
So one, Jesus...
Let's get Jesus in here.
Yeah, the one from Jesus. So this is a classic story from John chapter 8. And so to set this up, some men bring before Jesus a woman caught in adultery.
Mm-hmm.
The law says they should stone her.
Mm-hmm.
They're throwing in front of Jesus to be like,
What do we do?
And it's a trap because they're like, either Jesus is going to say stone her and they'd be like, that's a gotcha for them. Or Jesus is going to say don't stone her because then that's a gotcha for them. So either is he going to follow the Old Testament laws and they can use that against him, or is he going to break them and they can use that against him? So it's meant to be a gotcha.
Yep.
They don't actually care about the law all that much, or certainly not about this woman.
Yeah.
And you could tell because she's caught in adultery, but she's the only one there.
Yeah.
You know, so
yep.
yeah.
Just for everybody's clarity, adultery takes two people. Yes. So somebody's not getting pulled out to be stoned to death here.
When they kept on questioning, so he'd been down, draws in the dirt. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who's without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And once again, he bent down to write on the ground. When they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the elders, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on do not sin again." All right, there you go.
All right.
So Jesus sees somebody that the Old Testament law condemns to death.
Yes.
And he's not there to be like, actually, she didn't get caught in adultery. He's not disputing the charges.
Yeah.
But he is changing that. Like, he's changing how he's approaching this, right? This idea of, like, no one who's without sin will cast the first stone. All right. So how does this point us, if it at all, to the death penalty or to what grace looks like?
Yeah, I think how it points us to what grace looks like is remembering the brokenness that each of us have in our within our own lives, right? And recognizing that it is not ultimately up to us to carry out God's justice, right? That God's justice is beyond our understanding. And while there certainly can be consequences and punishments within the context of our society, we would do well to look at the speck in our own eye before we... No, wait, I said that wrong.
Sure.
Look at the log in our own eye before we point out the speck in someone else's eye, which is also a Jesus thing.
Jesus is interesting like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think for me, this definitely ends the idea of religious-based, you know, death penalty kind of thing. So, like, religious communities looking at either rule breakers or heretics or blasphemers, I mean, like, they're the ones that need death. I think for me, Jesus is kind of like, nah, that is over.
Yeah.
You know, because Israel is both, right? It's a religious community and a nation.
Yep.
And so, now, religious communities, by the way, are still going to practice the death penalty for a while after this, including Christian communities.
Including to today.
Yeah. So, but I think for me, this is saying, like, yeah, religious communities, this is not your, this is not what you should be doing anymore. I think Jesus, for me, is ending that.
Yeah.
But that's not that's not necessarily ending it for the state.
Correct.
Right. Like, that's, those are two different things.
Yes.
But this is, by the way, oftentimes when I argue with Christians online, they quote this because they like to, especially when it, members of our LGBTQ community, they're like, well, Jesus says, go and sin no more. And I always come back like, well, first he says, neither do I condemn you.
Yeah.
And like, that is, that's the driving force, presumably, for this woman, is that she stands before Jesus absolved and then gets this command.
Yeah.
And if all we have is the commandment without the absolved and loved and cared for, then I think you're missing the point of the story. So, but that's neither here nor there.
Also, it's not a sin to be gay. So,
well, I agree completely. But, like, you know,
I hear you. I hear you.
In some ways, you got to meet people where they are. And, like, that's the verse you're using. I'm going to challenge your verse, right? Yeah, like, so, like, you know.
I'm with you.
It's not a, as easy a process to draw somebody out.
It's never easy to argue with someone online. That's not.
Well, out of a position held for 30 years.
Agreed.
Right? But I can attack your argument.
Yes, so, you can. Yeah.
All right. Boom. Romans 13.
All right.
This is about the state. We've got some thoughts about the state.
Let's see what Paul has to say.
Yeah.
Romans 13, starting at verse 1, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those authorities that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Do you wish to have no fear of the authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive its approval. For it is God's servant for your good. But if you do what is wrong, you should be afraid, for the authority does not bear the sword in vain. It is the servant of God to execute wrath on the wrongdoer."
Okay. So Paul, Roman citizen, talking about Rome.
Yep.
You know, and hey, Rome gonna Rome. You know, that's that, you know, the Patrick paraphrase of Paul, that's what he's saying.
Rome's gonna Rome.
Rome, and that's just gonna be what it's gonna be. You know, like... similar to Jesus saying, hey, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. This is kind of his thought process too.
Yeah.
Rome is going to be Rome. And like, that's just, he cannot envision a world where that's different.
Yeah.
And also kind of saying like, hey, the state is going to enact a level of justice on its citizens. And as a Christian, you should live within that system. now many people over time have chosen not to.
Yes.
Including the founders of America. And sure. Those who led the American Revolution did not look at the state of England.
And Martin Luther.
Did not look at the state of England and be like, well, Paul said we should obey them. Even if they're unjust, based on our point of view, mm-hmm. our taxes, we should, you know, they don't land on we should obey the state.
Yeah.
So, I've heard this, like, oftentimes of, like, you should just obey the nation's laws.
Yes. And if you don't do anything wrong, you have nothing to be afraid of.
Yes. We'll get there.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's right there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do what is good, and you will receive its approval. And you have not,
Yeah. All right. So, according to Paul, mm-hmm. I think you can definitely use this to make an argument that it is okay for the state to enact punishment to its citizens when they break crimes.
Yes. And of course. Yeah.
And if you want to tie this into the Old Testament punishments, I mean, I think you can make the argument that the death penalty could be one of those punishments.
Yeah.
So for me, maybe we kind of get into like the end here. What does mm-hmm. the Bible say about the death penalty?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know,
yeah.
I can land on, I think you can make the argument.
Yes.
And I don't think it's an unreasonable argument.
I think you can make the argument, and I don't think it's unreasonable, but I also don't think it's the right argument.
I agree. And I think that's where we're going to probably land. Or at least where I land. Like, yeah, I think you can say it's okay for this. There are situations where it is okay for the state to enact the death penalty, but I'm not quite sure those situations ever truly arise.
Yeah.
And I say this like thinking like, are there people out there who have committed a crime against humanity that is so grievous that death is the best option? I'm going to say maybe. Like, truly, maybe. I'm not quite sure.
So, this actually is kind of breaking news.
Yeah.
Within the last 48 hours, two or three of the masterminds behind 9/11 got a plea deal for life sentences rather than facing a trial with the possibility of a death penalty.
Yeah. Wow.
And 9/11, like, masterminding 9/11, right, would sure. definitely be on my list of maybes, right?
Sure.
If you're gonna think of like what puts you up there in the maybe category, that's gonna make my list.
Sure. Yeah.
And yeah,
you know, horrific crimes against children, mm-hmm. against the vulnerable. You know, yeah, it lands on maybe. I think like I could see a world, especially if I'm closer, that wishing death upon that person is a bit of righteousness in anger, right? Yeah. I think that could be there. But here's the problem. In America, and I can't speak for every other nation, we have data mm-hmm. about how we've used the death penalty.
Yes.
And that data says sometimes we've gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
Like we can say with confidence, we executed people who were ultimately innocent of the crimes
yes.
we executed them mm-hmm. for. Or they were guilty by association, or they were guilty of having the wrong skin color, or they were guilty of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, or they didn't have a good enough alibi, or they're poor, or their lawyer was not very good.
Yep.
You know, like, and we executed them, and then afterwards we're like, whoops.
Yeah.
Like we, and it's not a small number.
Yeah, it's significant.
You know, it's not necessarily like 50%, but you know, somewhere, you know, estimated 5-ish%.
Any should be too high.
But any number should be too high.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to, if we're going to like take this seriously, like it has to be so beyond certain that this is, like, and even then I'm not crazy about it and we can get into that. But, right, like the possibility of anybody having this done to them unjustly just puts all the guilt back on us.
100%. Yeah.
As a society, not on the individual, but like on us as a society, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. All of us who thirst for blood
yes.
from perpetrators,
yes.
We're guilty of this
yeah.
because we're a part of that. We're part of the society that we live in. And even if you're against it, we're still part of the society that we live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and that's harder. That's maybe even harder to comprehend or grasp.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if we can say with confidence, the state sometimes gets it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the state to have that power anymore. Then, like, yeah. that's just like yeah. even if I recognize, like, I think the state has the right to punish people for crimes against its citizens. We can say the state gets it wrong, and when you do the death penalty, there are no takes back. There are no takebacks.
Yeah,
like there's no level of apology that erases it, and there's no level of like, well, we were wrong, and you spent 20 years in prison. Here's how we can make it right. And there's no way to make that right, but there's at least an offer that we can try.
Yeah.
You can't try here. There's no way to bring that these people back from the dead that we executed 50, 30, 10 years ago that were ultimately found to be innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you. Or not, maybe we're standing apart. I'm with the, I can see there are things that could deserve death, but we can't be sure we get it 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So I'm against the death penalty for that reason.
Yeah, I hear that. I think one of the challenges for me is that we often let our views of this policy, of this practice, be so drastically impacted by the very understandable emotions of the families of those who have been harmed.
100%.
Right? So
crying victims, I empathize and I want to support them. Yeah,
absolutely. And victims need our support. I do not want to say that victims do not need our support. 100%. But there is also an element in which there's a reason that cities of refuge existed. Yeah. And cities of refuge existed to protect people from vengeance that was not justified.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean for us as a society to have a space to not let people off, right? I'm not saying like, oh, well, you can do whatever you want, right? Yeah. Life in prison is a great option, right? Yeah. And actually statistically cheaper and more cost effective than or the death penalty, but that's a whole nother issue, right? Yeah. But, you know, how do we as a society step in and say, yeah, we understand, victim, that you want vengeance. We understand that. But as a society, we want to be clear that we don't take vengeance out by execution, right? Like we will have this person in prison for the rest of their life. And I'm sorry if that doesn't satiate your need for blood, but that's how we are going to protect this person and society from their actions ever again.
For sure. Yeah. Because even, you know, again, we've pulled the lever of that vengeance on people that were ultimately innocent.
Sure.
And so, yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where I think we're ultimately wrapping up here. We're ultimately land on, like, we just can't get it right 100% of the time. Yeah. And I think people out there who, like, I'm in favor of the death penalty ultimately think I'll never be that asterisk.
Yeah.
And the people I care about will never be that asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
That even though there are, I mean, like, it's undeniable there are asterisks out there of that they were ultimately innocent. They're like, but that's not me and mine. You know, like, that's what ultimately we think. And so, like, that hopefully leads a level of like empathy to say, like, it may not be me and mine, it may not be the people in my world and that I care about directly, but it's someone's son or someone's daughter, someone's father, someone's mother, someone's husband, someone's wife who is executed unjustly.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. So that's where I land.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can make a biblical argument to say it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that means it's the right thing to do.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because I don't think it's a thing that, like, governs God's understanding of us, right? If I'm going to fall back on anything, I'm going to fall back on Jesus and Jesus's desire to reconcile all of humanity back to God's self.
Sure.
And so if we are trying to embody Jesus as a church, then why wouldn't we also be striving for reconciliation as opposed to vengeance? And again, I'm not supporting just releasing people to go wherever they want to go and do it and say there's no crime or there's no punishment, right?
Yeah.
Punishment is not the same as the death penalty.
Yeah.
And there are ways for us to punish crimes appropriately without executing people.
Yeah. We live in a world with far greater resources to put towards punishment than just execution that the ancient Israelites did not have.
Yeah.
So
it also says something that when you, like, research death penalty practices now, the states have to go through so many, like, back channels to get off-market drug solutions for execution by lethal injection because no companies want to be associated. Like, it's such a flammable topic that nobody wants to acknowledge that they're a part of the process.
Yeah.
And that itself should say something. Like, if we're not even willing to talk openly about how we kill people, why are we still killing people? That might be something that we should. Yeah. But that's not a biblical argument. That's a different conversation altogether.
All right. Well, there you go. What does the Bible say about the death penalty? Complex. So,
seems like we're coming down on that a lot.
Seems like it.
Except for the Christian Nation one. That one was pretty clear.
No, I agree. The Bible is very, very much anti.
Against that, yeah.
I think everyone else, there's some complexity to it.
There is, But Jesus. Thanks for Jesus.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of that dude.
Yeah, I think he's got a good thing going. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, then we'd love to hear about it. If you didn't, don't worry. Elise will be back next week, and you can enjoy it again once she returns. But we will hope you... What? Is she not back next week?
She will be. Okay. Just your phraseology. Like, you'll enjoy this episode next week when she returns.
Yeah.
When I just need her to be back in Texas.
Then
I'm like, oh, yeah, this
when Elise gets back, you'll realize how good this episode was. It's like, oh, right. That's why I enjoyed it. But anyway, you can send your thoughts or questions to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com and find all our episodes, with Elise or not, at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Genuinely, tell us what you think. Like, if we are not presenting an argument correctly, or if you see something different in Scripture or on either side, we want to know.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
And we want to address that. Like, so please let us know if we miss something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a lawyer who knows if there's a certain number of witnesses that are required for a death penalty case. I'd be curious about that.
Me too. Yeah. Well, yeah, what are the parameters around it?
Even if you're not a lawyer, if you think you know something, we want to hear from you.
I've seen a few episodes of Law and Order.
Good enough. Right in.
Bum, bum. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.